So I'm driving to the Rose Bowl. It's Tuesday. And I think I mentioned on this podcast before that I have a Tuesday-Thursday ride that is a large group ride, which comprises about 100 to 200 riders in a large group. We go around the Rose Bowl 10 times in about an hour five. So I think we average somewhere around 26, 27 miles an hour, which for a group is a pretty decent pace. For riding solo, I think I can average about 22 an hour. That's the fastest that I can go. Oh, that's me slamming on the brakes because I hit a light. And I don't want to run through it because someone is making a left. Anyway, so I can ride solo about 22 miles an hour. Riding with a group, I can average about 26, 27 miles an hour. That 4-mile-an-hour differential is substantial. That's if I were to ride that speed solo, I'd have to put out probably double the amount of power or more that I am capable of, which is to say that unless I were another human being or unless I took steroids and did something drastic, there's no way that I would be able to ride at that speed. In fact, there are so very few people who can ride at that speed solo. The elite cyclists perhaps can maintain that speed for a short amount of time, but that is it is 26, 27 miles an hour is a fantastic speed. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is to give you an idea of what I'm doing. I come out here and I ride with a large group for about an hour nine, depends on the day, for about 31 miles. One lap is 3.1 miles. Multiply that by 10, you get 31 miles, but it's over pretty quick. So why do I come out here? I come out here because it's because I don't know, and that's what I'm trying to figure out. I don't come out here because it's fun. There's some element of fun to it, right? There's some element of it that is pleasant. The pleasantries that we exchange during the warm-up lap, the being able to talk about it afterwards, the camaraderie, all that stuff that's fun. But when you're in this ride and you're doing the amount of work that I do, that I typically expect to do, which is ride in the front and take pulls, it is extremely unpleasant to the extent that it is perhaps mostly just painful. But there's some part of that unpleasantness that I truly, truly enjoy. But I wouldn't call it's not fun. It's just that I'm obsessed with it, or that I feel like I need it or I deserve it. I don't know if it's that I, you know, whether it's categorized under self-inflicted pain. Maybe it has something to do with, you know, the lack of self-worth and needing to feel pain as a result of that. I don't know what it is, but certainly there is some level of attachment that I have with this ride. So it's hard for me to describe. I don't know what it is, but I will try to get that in my head while I'm riding here for 10 laps alone, actually, because the ride is over and I'll talk about that in a little bit. I'll be back. So I still have no answers for you guys. I just came back from the ride and we put together a small group, about 5 guys, and one of the guys, he's a Cat 1 rider, which is basically he's the fastest guy. That's the fastest classification of cyclists. Cat 1 is basically world class. It's anywhere between local world class and world class, which for local, he's a local pro. He's a local, he's the fastest guy for miles around here. But then, you know, that class extends all the way up to the Tour de France level type guys. And he's not that fast, but he's fast enough. And at these speeds, what's happening is, because cycling is so much about wind resistance, if you ride behind another guy. It's a lot like a NASCAR where you can draft off of the guy in front of you. So you can expend a lot less energy and still ride with him. But you can only do that if you put out enough power to stay on his tail. There's still a minimum power requirement. And if you don't meet that minimum requirement, then you can't even ride behind him. So you don't have to put out enough power. You don't have to put out the same amount of power he's putting out, but you do have to put out enough power to stay behind him. It's usually anywhere between about like 75%, 60 to 75% of the guy, you know, working in front of you. And this guy, he puts out, let's just call it 400 watts of power. And if, as long as I'm putting out like 260, 275, I can hang on with him for a little while. And he can't put out 400 watts forever. So it's more of a, it's kind of a game of, well, how long can he last? And then how long can I last at putting out 260, 275 watts? But getting back to why it is that I love riding it. I mean, of course there's the adrenaline. Of course there's the endorphins that are released and you feel good and it's good for your body and all of that stuff. But I think there's something about that extremity of consciousness, of living, of pain. It's, you know, let me not exaggerate. It's not like childbirth pain, okay? And it's not like getting shot pain. It's not like extreme trauma pain. It's more of a dull, achy, I mean, it's still extreme, you know, don't get me wrong. When my heart is beating at 185, 190, 95 beats a minute is what I saw this year. It sucks and it hurts like a motherfucker. And there's part of your body that's telling you to stop, right? And then the other part of your body is telling you, don't let go. Because you're either pushing out in the front, you're pushing the wind, or you're riding behind someone who's just hauling ass, and you don't want to be the bitch that lets go because there are a bunch of guys behind you who are depending on you to hold on. So there's certainly that social aspect to it. But if I'm holding on, it's, I mean, yeah, a lot of it is I don't want to lose face, right? But it's more for me. It's more like I don't want to disappoint myself. And at that edge of consciousness where you're hanging on to a thread in so many different ways, physically, it's, you're just at the upper extremities of your abilities. I mean, you're probably at zone six, zone three, four, five. I want to say zone three is like a middle to long endurance type effort, you know, like a marathon effort. Zone four, I think you're looking at about a middle effort. Zone five, you're looking at a short effort, about 5 minutes. Six and seven, you're looking at about 1 minute, maybe 2 minutes. And whatever zone seven is, I think that's like burst of speed, maybe like sprint distance, a couple seconds at a time. But at those efforts, you're really just counting down until what we call, until you pop, until you can't hold on anymore. You explode, you know, kaboom, that's it, game over. And at that level, so many things are happening. I think, like for me, I can, if you listen to how my brain is reacting, it gets very frazzled. It's not unlike when I don't get sleep and I'm very, very tired and just all over the place. My mind is starting to unravel, literally unravel. I can't control my thoughts. I'm starting to lose it. You know, just literally I'm falling apart mentally. But there's something about that extremity that is, I guess, I have to imagine that's how extreme athletes live. I think that's what they're looking for. They're looking for that sliver, final edge, you know, that last, I mean, it's there, if you push any harder, you'll either pass out, you'll either have a heart attack, or you're going to shit yourself. Like, one of these things are going to happen. And I have, as I get older, I start to realize that level of pushing yourself is no longer really sustainable, because as our bodies start to break down a little bit, you know, like, for example, the other day I was running sprints, which I haven't done in years. And on my ninth sprint, it was about 200 yards. You know, I sprint 200 yards, jog back, sprint 200 yards, jog back. On my ninth sprint, I felt my chest start to constrict, and my breathing became very labored at the end of the sprint. And I couldn't recover. And it was weird because my teeth started to tingle, my upper teeth started to tingle, and I couldn't even jog back, which is what I had done 8 times before. And I had to walk. And I was thinking to myself, Jesus, am I having a heart attack? But I don't have any predisposition towards, you know, heart conditions or, you know, cholesterol or hypertension or any of that. So it wasn't a heart attack, but it was definitely that, you know, I pushed myself to some level of maybe I went a little too far. And I've seen myself do this time and time again, more often as I get older. Like sometimes I'll stretch and I'll overstretch and I'll actually pull my, like usually it's when I'm trying to, like, you know, stretch out my back and I'm trying to touch my toes. I'm overdoing the stretch, you know, and that used to not be possible when you were young, because, you know, when you're young, it's like impossible to hurt yourself. You're invincible. But as I'm getting older, I'm starting to see, you know, I am quite literally on that edge of survival. And it's not unlike that time that I almost drowned. I misestimated and I miscalculated what it takes to come back and to survive that situation. And as you get older, that envelope gets thinner and thinner. It's not as fat, it's not as forgiving. Whereas when you're young, you can run wind sprints till you throw up, but you won't pass out. It's very unlikely, you know. But as I get older, I'm starting to see, like, that envelope is getting razor thin, and mistakes are now more and more costly. Especially like this year, when I'm riding behind a guy as strong as Ronnie Toth, who we've had on a podcast. He's an amazing cyclist. And you're on that rivet, you're on that envelope of survival, of unforgiveness. One false move and I might cause an accident either for myself or the guys behind me. Like if I start to lose control of my bike, there are like 150 cyclists behind me that are depending on me to hold my line. If I don't hold my line, I'm going to cause a really bad accident either for myself, touching wheels with Ronnie in front of me, or causing someone to touch wheels with me from behind. So I don't know. As you know, I don't think we have these considerations when we're younger, because we think that we're invincible. But again, that's something that happens when you get a little older. I'm not that old. Again, I'm 37, but still, I think about stuff, especially when you have kids and whatnot. But anyway, that's not the point. The point of what I was trying to get at is I'm trying to figure out what it is about that thing, that edge, that insanity that is so calls me back. You know, if I'm exercising like I have been, I'm on 6 days, I'm off one day, I'm on 6 days, I'm off one day. So I'm riding, running, doing sprints, you know, working out, whatever it is. I do 6 days a week and I take one day off, usually Sunday. If I'm on and I have my momentum going, I'm lusting for that. I have like this bloodlust for wanting to have that, whatever that thing is. And it's painful, but yet it's so, you know, I'm sure on some level it's masochistic, you know, because it's not all pleasant, but yet there's some part of it that is either psychologically or chemically very gratifying. And I can't quite put my finger on it. And so I'm trying to figure out what it is about my personality that demands that. The funny thing is I don't like pain. If you ask me to go to the dentist and say, hey, you know, we're out of Novocaine, bye, I'm out. I'll see you next time when you restock your Novocaine. Like I'm not here to get drilled on without my shots. I don't like needles. You know, I'm okay with them. It's not like I'll pass out. If you want to draw blood, I'll watch you draw blood. You know, it's okay. I don't like the pain. I don't like any sort of pain that's inflicted upon me by some third party. I think I'm very good with pain that I inflict upon myself. And that's very different. And I also think that there's some mental pain that I inflict upon myself, physical pain that I inflict upon myself that is incredibly gratifying. And I, again, like I alluded to earlier, I don't know if it has anything to do with, you know, self-esteem issues or, you know, like being beaten. But the funny thing is, like, I also don't gravitate towards that S&M shit. Like, that to me doesn't look like any fun at all. Because on the flip side of it, it is someone else, you know, in inflicting pain on you. That doesn't look like fun to me. So I'm not in that S&M stuff at all. It that's a total turn off. So, but I do like the sports. I do like the competition. Of course, I think so much of it is a competition, like why I ride, why I go out there, why I try to kill myself, why, I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, I did this bike ride, and usually a bike ride is a group effort. You know, for us, when we're, let's say, on this ride, it was a 20-25 sized group, and at the farthest distance away from home, I decided I'm gonna go solo. I want to break away. I want to run away from everybody, and I want to see if I can do this. And I did. I rode a mile an hour faster than the whole group at the farthest distance from home, or the destination, the end of the bike ride. I wound up riding, I think I averaged like 20.7 miles an hour by myself, and the group averaged like 19.9 or something, 19.8 or something like that. So it's always for me a cat and mouse game, and I like the short interval. You know, I don't like games that span days or even hours. Like golf, I'm not good at because it's just too long. I like things that are highly intense, but it ends, and then you can learn from it. You know, short cycles, I'm good with short cycles. Long cycle things where it's like you got to spend a long time to do one full cycle, it's hard. But yeah, there's something about, I don't know that there are that many similarities between, you know, retouching or shooting. I really don't think there is. I think it borrows, and I will say this, for example, like one of the reasons, or one of the things I was talking about earlier, where it's very black and white, the edge of forgiveness or unforgiveness, where you're riding or cycling or running or whatever it is that you're doing, it's a black and white realm. There is no gray, and for that reason, it's very consoling. It's very soothing to me, because I don't have to worry about, oh, well, there's this and there's that, and there you can do it this way. No, you can't. There's one way to do it. For example, if I'm pushing myself, and you know, I'm riding in the front of the group, or I'm riding behind some guy who's pulling, doesn't matter. The point of it is, I have to stay there. There's nowhere else I can be. I have to be right there. I have to put out an X amount of power. And if I don't, then I better get the fuck out. And so for me, that's a very happy place. For me, it's easy. It's simple. I don't have to use my brain. I just do it. You know, you fall in line and you do the work, and you just, you know, don't think, don't complain, just do. Which is in such contrast to so many of the decision making, you know, so many of the complicated, oh, you could do it this way, you could do it that way, it can be color, it can be black and white, you can shoot it like this, you can shoot it like that, you can compose this way, you know, you can light this way, that way. It's like, you know, there's that side of being an artist that it's great, and yet I'm at such odds with it so often, because it's too many choices. So I don't think that there's necessarily that much you can borrow from that extreme exertion or effort, and I don't know where it really applies itself elsewhere, other than the fact that when shit hits the fan, like, I love when shit hits the fan. Like, that is, I don't wish for it, I don't hope for it, but I can always manage it. There's never a time when I feel like, oh, I can't handle this, you know. Even with, especially with people, because, you know, photography and what we do is such a people thing. It is so easy to clamp down, and when something needs to be nipped in the bud, you just put your foot down and be like, look, hey, this is not going to work. You got to stop. You know, you can't be doing this, or you got to be on time, or this is a team effort. You can't be doing what you want to do. Now, that being said, of course, then there's that human element where you have to kind of put it to them gently and say it nicely, which I'm not always necessarily the best at, but I try. But there is something about crisis management that lends itself well. There's something about being on that rivet and on the edge that lends itself to crisis management, which is something that I feel like I am very at ease with. Not that it's ever easy. It's always a challenge, but it's just not, it's not unmanageable, you know. And on some level, in some level of my sick personality, I look forward to that. I look forward to someone pushing back. I look forward when models gripe about stuff or they ask for shit that they shouldn't be asking for, you know. I will admit this, that those are the models that are much more memorable than the wallflowers. You know, girls that come in here and they just kind of, they don't say much, they don't do much, those are the ones that don't leave an impression. And as much as it is easy for me to mold them and have them become what it is that I want to see in order to shoot what I want to shoot and create what I want to create, it doesn't leave for very lasting impressions. And I don't know. I've never thought about whether I liked it or not. I just always managed the situation, you know. I've always dealt with it as if this were a game. And so much of what we do is a game. There's the first impression. There is the expectation management. There's a short-term expectation management, which is what you do during the shoot. And then the long-term expectation management, which is how they feel when they get their pictures back and what they expect from you. And then, you know, all the things that happen after the shoot's over. And I think all of it is fun on some level because it is game theory. It's fun for, you know, me to think about expected values, you know, what's the best outcome and how do I do this and how do I do that? And, you know, it's strategy is fun too for me. It's not just that I only like doing the things that are 120% of intensity level. It's all fun. Yeah, I'll have to keep thinking about this. And I don't know if that I'm necessarily going to draw any conclusions, but there's something about that edge, about being completely frazzled, of having your mind fall apart, your body fall apart, and seeing whether or not you can hang on, you know, seeing whether or not you can retain your sanity. And I actually don't think I'm a very mentally strong person. I don't think that I've got a strong mental game. I don't think it's bad. I think my weakness is it depends a lot on my biochemistry. I don't have a very consistent biochemistry, so it depends on how I feel that day. And perhaps one of the reasons I do these things is to retain that ability to control my sanity. Because sometimes it takes that huge effort, that huge push in order for me to really exert myself and get to the point where I want to do anything. Otherwise, a lot of times I just kind of refrain. I take myself out of that situation altogether. But once you're there, there's no backing out. And I love that there's no wishy-washiness. There's no gray. You know, there's no this or that or maybes. It either is or it's not. And it has to be. It just has to work. And I love that about certain elements about what I do. It's why I have such an high expectations out of all the machinery, right? All the stuff that I use, whether it's a camera or it's a printer or it's a display, and it just all has to work a certain way. I have an incredibly high expectation. I also train myself to be able to use them in a way where I get the most out of it, right? I'm a power user. I use shortcuts, but I also expect the shit to work exactly the way I want it to work. And I have very little tolerance. And a lot of this has to do with tolerance. My level of tolerance for stuff working, for machines working, for tools working, is also the same level of expectation I have of myself when I'm pushing at that edge, which is the same level of expectation I have of myself when I'm shooting. I have to have what it is that I need to get at that razor edge. And I'm, you know, it's a little different when I'm shooting, but still there is that level of excellence that I'm trying to acquire and trying to achieve. And I think that is consistent throughout shooting and also cycling or any of these sports that I do. So, all that being said, let's see if I give it some thought and some more time and see if I can put together any other more cohesive and more consistent conclusions. But this is part of my life that's very, it's a streak. It's a streak of my personality that defines me. It also makes me who I am and how I do what I do. And it really does actually reflect itself in the picture. So to try to understand yourself on that level, I think is really important, whether, you know, whether I'm talking about this or whether you're thinking about something that it is that you do that is specific to you. But you should always try to figure out what makes you tick. You know, what are the things that really make you you? Because those are the things that they bleed into stylistically, how you do things, how you color things, how you, you know, grade your images and whatnot. But they're fun to think about. All right. Talk to you guys later. Peace.